This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, a spate of bipartisan legislative activity and presidential politics 2016. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The U.S. Senate has finally confirmed Loretta Lynch as Attorney General, 5 months after her nomination by President Barack Obama. Lynch becomes the first black woman in the nation's top law enforcement post, replacing Eric Holder, the first African-American man to hold the post. Lynch's nomination had been held up for weeks after Senate Democrats blocked passage of legislation aimed at cracking down on human trafficking because it included an anti-abortion amendment inserted into the bill by Republicans. The impasse over the abortion measure was broken earlier this week when a handful of Republicans and Democrats reached a compromise and unanimously passed the human trafficking bill. The U.S. Senate is also set to begin debate next week on bipartisan legislation subjecting any final nuclear accord with Iran to congressional review. Initially, the Obama administration vigorously opposed any measure giving lawmakers a de facto veto over a final Iran nuclear accord, but the White House conceded tepid support for the compromise version of the bill. A U.S. Senate panel has also approved legislation to facilitate the formation and approval of an ambitious Pacific Regional Trade Pact. On this, President Obama is more aligned with congressional Republicans than Democrats, many of whom oppose his request for so-called fast-track authority, which they think will adversely affect American jobs. And let the race begin. Former Secretary of State and Senator Hillary Clinton was in the northeast U.S. state of New Hampshire this week, her second campaign swing since announcing her candidacy for president earlier this month. According to a recent public opinion survey, Clinton has a commanding lead among all potential Democratic candidates, including Vice President Joe Biden, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. As for the Republican contenders, the race is wide open, but the same public opinion poll shows Republican Senator from Florida Marco Rubio leading the large group of hopefuls that also include Florida Governor Jeb Bush and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. Well, with us to discuss the implications of recent legislative actions and presidential politics are two veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. He's also a regular columnist for the Politico newspaper. And Arkady Gurney, he's a senior vice president at the Center for American Progress. That's a liberal think tank here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carol.
John Fortier, let me begin with you. We have a spurt of legislative activity all of a sudden, some bipartisan action with the final approval of Loretta Lynch as Attorney General, a number of other actions I mentioned. What's going on here?
Well, I think we began looking at the Congress with pretty low expectations that the president and the Republican majority didn't agree on a lot of things. Maybe trade, you mentioned, there was a possibility. But all of a sudden, the last few weeks, we've had a number of good signs. I would add to that the budget and appropriation bill seem to be moving along. We at the Bipartisan Policy Center actually put out an index this week, our first release, at how the Congress is proceeding on procedure, how fairly it's allowing lots of amendments, and that they seem to be up on that too, allowing a better debate in the Senate and the House. I think it's a good sign. I think putting it in perspective, we still do have pretty significant disagreements between the parties. Some of what will get through the Congress won't get past the president's desk. Iran is, I think, still quite controversial, even though we have some agreement on the particular bill that will allow Congress to weigh in on it. But for a Congress where we expected not so much to get done and for there to be little agreement, it's a good start at an early date.
Arkady Gurney, a good start in your view? And how do you think this reflects on the Republican-led Congress, in a positive way or?
Well, I think that, you know, it depends on what your expectations are. If you start with very, very low expectations on what a Congress can and should be, the last few weeks, I think, have exceeded what would be very low expectations.
Sorry.
for example, with the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, who was confirmed today, it's terrific that the Senate finally took action on that nomination. But she'd been waiting for action for 160 days, which is longer than any Attorney General nominee in 30 years. And, you know, quite outwardly, it wasn't anything to do with her qualifications or her record. It had to do with this abortion measure attached to this human trafficking bill. And, you know, it raises the question, does everything that government does in terms of putting people into offices and funding the government to do its work, does it have to get hung up into these policy questions and disagreements? It's good that this one's been resolved. It's good that there's some encouraging signs on other matters as well. But it is still discouraging that so much time and so much effort was required to do what should be pretty basic, which is put an extremely well-qualified person into a top job in government. And it shouldn't take 160 plus days to do that.
Indeed. Well, back to you, John Fortier, to look at some upcoming legislative activity. For example, we're going to be looking at the trade bill. The Senate panel is going to be approving legislation to facilitate the formation and approval of this ambitious Pacific Regional Trade Pact. But we know that there's quite a bit of disagreement, and in this case, a rather interesting alignment where you have U.S. President Barack Obama looking for a passage, looking for approval of fast-track authority, and the Republicans approving that or in line with him. But many Democrats are opposed to this. How do you see this playing out?
Well, this was one we were watching because it is a case of strange bedfellows, but really has been the case for quite a while. I would say this, that Republican and Democratic presidents have basically been on the side of free trade, you know, more or less. But within Congress, there certainly is a good chunk of the Democratic caucus, which is much more skeptical of trade. So an alignment of Republicans in charge with a Democratic president can be a good alignment for getting these things done. I think, you know, the president still, obviously, you need to get the deal right. And he's going to have some indication to his Democratic supporters that he has done something to protect labor and environmental protections. Some of those might be controversial to Republicans. But on the whole, I think this is a formula for some success, that the Congress will likely give the president trade promotion authority, which essentially is the ability to negotiate a deal and come to Congress with an up or down vote without all the amendments and objections that individual members of Congress would have, and gives trade deals a much better chance of getting through the process.
Turning to you, Arkady Gurney, as John Fortier said, this so-called trade promotion authority is seen as critical for approving this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which involves the United States and 11 other nations that combined account for about 40% of the world's gross domestic output. However, we do acknowledge quite a bit of opposition, particularly among liberal Democrats who support labor groups who are somehow opposed to this, thinking that this could hurt American jobs and merchandise. How do you see negotiations over this playing out, particularly given so much Democratic opposition?
Well, I think that the trade bill and the Iran debate sort of both raise the same kinds of issues, which is what is the appropriate role of the president in negotiating agreements with foreign countries, and what is the role that Congress should have both in ultimately ratifying those agreements, but also setting the terms for how that negotiation ought to proceed. And so what you've seen among Republicans on the trade question is seemingly a lot of willingness to defer to the executive branch, but you don't see that on the Iran issue, where 47 Republicans sent a letter to the government of Iran essentially warning them about the role that Congress could play, would play in that negotiation. So I think you see some distinctions both among Democrats and Republicans in how those two issues are being discussed, but they raise the same kinds of questions. And I think the ultimate answer is there's an appropriate role for each of the branches in ultimately setting up agreements with foreign countries. And, you know, what you're coming up against are some very important substantive questions, whether they're about national security, whether they're about protections for workers and the environment and avoiding a race to the bottom on trade. You know, I think that's what's playing out across both of those bills and issues right now.
Back to you, John Fortier. Arkady Gurney makes a very good point about how these two issues, whether it's trade promotion authority or the Iran nuclear deal, how they illustrate both the balance between the role of the legislative branch and the executive branch. Let's look at the Iran deal as well, because the Congress has fought for a role in approving the deal. and compromises were made, and President Obama had to concede, even though he was vigorously opposed. So as we look forward to the debate on the Iran deal, how do you think that is also going to play out?
Well, I think there was some broad agreement that Congress did have a role, and I think there was some good legislative work by the Republican chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker, who knew that the strongest role for Congress wasn't going to get all Democratic votes, but did get an opportunity to have Congress put itself on the record that it wanted to be part of the process. I still think if we go behind that, that there are still some very strong disagreements about this agreement, which is not yet an agreement.
It's true.
It's an initial agreement without the details. President Obama really viewing this as an important aspect of his legacy, and most Republicans and some Democrats viewing it as potentially a very dangerous thing to be doing and locking ourselves in and worrisome to our ally Israel. So that's not going to go away. I think it was good that the parties found a way to get something through a Congress that has to have a supermajority to get done, to express some role. But at the end of the day, I think we'll still have a very contentious debate over this.
And turning to you again on this topic, Arkady Gurney, looking toward the debate that will begin next week on this bipartisan legislation subjecting any final nuclear accord with Iran to congressional review and a potential vote approving or rejecting the deal. And again, as John Fortier said, we don't have a deal yet. We're looking toward the end of June. We'll see. But still, do you see this as, to some extent, a victory for the two branches working out, compromise, and especially between the Republican-controlled Congress and the Democrats having been able to reach this compromise to at least, look at the deal if in fact it comes to pass and have some say in it?
Yeah, well, I think it is encouraging, and I'd agree with John that the role that Chairman Corker, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman, is playing, I think, is a productive one, and it's helping, I think, rebuild some trust between the Congress and the president on these kinds of questions. And I think that's very important because if, the president is essentially playing chess on two chessboards at the same time. One is to try to negotiate best deal for the United States national security with Iran. The other is trying to negotiate with Congress, and the Iranians are aware of that. And so it is important to have a vigorous debate. These are important issues, and there is no easy path in terms of dealing with the threat of a nuclear Iran. But we also want to build enough trust between the branches, between the parties, so that we don't allow our adversaries to take advantage of disagreements at home to manipulate us and get an agreement or no agreement, because either path could be advantageous to Iran, that puts us at a disadvantage. So I think it is healthy to have some debate. It is healthy to have some disagreement. But I think there also has to be some trust built so that all sides within the United States are really working productively to advance our national interests.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Arkady Gurney, from whom you just heard. He's a senior vice president at the Center for American Progress, a think tank also based here in Washington. And we're talking about U.S. politics and, soon, potential Democratic and Republican contenders for the White House in 2016. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA and connect with us on Facebook. Or you can send feedback via email to encounter@voanews.com. Here's a shout out to a loyal Facebook fan from Tetouan, Morocco, Nour Mouati. Merci and gracias. Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's premier newsmaker interview program. If you have ideas for guests or topics, or want to comment on one of our programs, please write to us at Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. That's Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or if you have access to the Internet, send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is pcusa@voanews.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Well, back to you, John Fortier. Let's take a look at the race for the presidency. We note that Hillary Clinton finally made the official announcement that she's in, and we have a number of Republican contenders. But let's take a look at Hillary Clinton first. What do you think her major challenge is, and what are her strengths and weaknesses?
Well, it looks different on the Republican and Democratic sides. On the Democratic side, there is a clear favorite, and that is Hillary Clinton. And she begins with all sorts of advantages. She has a strong history of having been in the White House with her husband. But then, as many people had discouraged her from running for the Senate and thought she could have a nice life as an ex-First Lady, but she ran for the Senate. I think got a lot of credibility by doing that and serving in the Senate. Lost a race and then came back and people didn't think she should be Secretary of State. She went in and I think gained some extra credibility there. So she has experience. She has the backing of many people in the party, the ability to fundraise. She's a very strong candidate. Now, I would have told you in 2008 that she was a very strong candidate, almost very, very difficult to beat. And of course, she lost. I think one challenge she'll face, I think she'll, well, two criticisms will be made of her. One, there'll be some challenge from the left that will say she's too hawkish on foreign policy or that she doesn't take seriously economic inequality. And for those people in the party, they would love to see an Elizabeth Warren, a senator from Massachusetts, run. She's indicated she won't. People could change their minds. But someone to take up that mantle and say, you know, maybe Hillary Clinton is too establishment, maybe a little too far right. The other criticism is, of course, going to be this is another Clinton, and we've seen a lot of this movie. We've seen a President Clinton, and we've seen runs by Hillary Clinton, and don't we have a fresher face in the game? Now, if, of course, it's the second Clinton versus the third Bush on the other side, people will be making that complaint even more. But I do think those are the two challenges she'll face, a challenge from the left and the question of do we need a fresher face?
Arkady Gurney, to you on Hillary Clinton, with respect to any kind of shortcomings, do you also see a challenge to the left? Some criticizing her as being so-called, you know, soft on capitalism, you know, not, you know, liberal enough. And what about this fresh face, this sort of this dynasty argument? Oh, no, another Clinton, just like on the Republican side, we might be seeing another Bush.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the challenges for anyone who's very well known and has a lot of experience and has been in the public eye for many, many years, and Secretary Clinton certainly fits that label, is convincing voters that even though you've been around for a while and you're very well known, that this election is about the future and it's about what's good for voters and for the new challenges coming up in the future. And it's not about just having a lot of experience and a long record and that sort of thing. And I think in the rollout of the Clinton campaign, which ranged, you know, from the video, but also the approach that they're taking to the events that they're doing in Iowa and New Hampshire, it has put a lot of focus on what are the challenges that all kinds of different people are facing. And I think you've seen a reaction both among the left and people who might want other candidates on the left, but also some critics on the right, that this was a smart rollout, a well-done rollout, and that really by putting the lens more on the voters and their needs and their challenges that, rather than the candidate themselves, that this got the Clinton campaign off to a good start.
Well, back to you, John Fortier. Before we turn to the Republicans, another question with respect to Democrats. Do you see any other candidates coming forward? I mean, we hear possibly Vice President Joe Biden, possibly Bernie Sanders, a very liberal senator from Vermont. Who else may come out to challenge, or do you think that Hillary really has a lock on it?
Well, I think she's the strong favorite, and she'll have a challenger. And you didn't mention Martin O'Malley, the governor of Maryland, will be somebody who's running, and I think we'll try to challenge her from the left.
From the left.
You know, it isn't quite as large a field as I would have expected. I always expected the Republican field to be bigger, but, you know, it's a pretty small field. Now there is an opportunity for somebody to jump in. People do mention the vice president. I don't think that's probably a smart move for the vice president. I don't think he has a strongly different base than Hillary Clinton. He's going to be 74 years old. If you wanted to, you know, think wildly about people who could jump in the race and make it interesting, you think about an Al Gore who's been out of politics for a while, but I don't think that's very likely. So I think we're going to have a relatively small field on the Democratic side, somebody winning the anti-Hillary primary as being the challenger to her from the left, but ultimately probably not being successful. So it's a little smaller than we thought.
Well, Arkady Gurney, who do you see as the anti-Hillary candidate, if any?
Well, I think it remains to be seen whether any of these potential other challengers, if any of them get momentum for some period of time or show some strength in one of these early primary states, that could happen. That also may not happen. And you may see that Secretary Clinton is sort of a dominant candidate from start to finish. You know, I think whether there is a strong challenge, there's still going to be debates. There's still going to be interactions with voters. There's still going to be sitting down with the editorial boards in Iowa and New Hampshire, and there's still going to be a big microscope. So I think that people are going to have, during the primary process, the opportunity to ask questions of Hillary Clinton and hear about what her ideas are for the future. And there'll certainly be that opportunity in the general election. And you know, you'll see two visions of where to take the country. And voters will have the opportunity, as they always do, to try to measure up those visions and choose the one that they think makes sense.
Well, back to you, John Fortier, and turning now to the Republican contenders, which are arguably, you know, going to be many more, and the fight may be much more divisive. And let me read something from the Wall Street Journal, which, at least from the journal's point of view, or this particular author, sets up what's at stake for the Republicans. The author says, on one side are Jeb Bush and Senators Rand Paul and Lindsey Graham, who emphasize the party's nominee needs to reach beyond the Republican base of mostly white and older conservative voters, given how the general electorate is growing increasingly diverse. On the other side sits a handful of contenders, including Senator Ted Cruz and Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, who say the party's nominee needs to be a dedicated conservative who can mobilize the religious right to turn out in droves in 2016. Do you see it that way?
Well, I think there are those tensions. I guess I might not agree with that analysis. I find it interesting, actually, that they pointed to a Hispanic senator and an Indian American governor as those who are, don't want to see increasing the diversity of the party.
That's a very good observation.
but I think, you know, there is a fair point that Republicans, I think, have been thinking for a while about the changing demographics of America and finding where they might reach out. A couple of ways certainly would be for them to improve their standing with the Latino vote. You do have two Latino candidates running, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Jeb Bush, who has a Mexican-American wife, has been governor in Florida, speaks Spanish. So there are definitely some candidates, I think, who will be reaching out. I guess, you know, I think you also have to think about which candidates are seen as more of the establishment and which are seen as the outsiders. If I had to focus on a few of the many candidates, I would say there are five that are of note. Jeb Bush, of course, who is not the favorite as is Hillary Clinton, but still is a strong candidate, the strongest establishment candidate from the get-go.
He is not officially...
No, but lots of indications are that he's going to be in the race. Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, has an interesting mix, I think. One with... he's from a Midwestern state, a swing state, and has won there. But he's also won some fans on the conservative side because he stood up to unions in a very strong way, been challenged by them and beat them back. So I think he can play both the conservative as well as the establishment game. Two candidates, I think, you know, in the Tea Party realm, one Rand Paul, more of a libertarian, and one Ted Cruz, more socially conservative and hawkish. And then Marco Rubio, a very interesting candidate, the son of a Cuban immigrant, who is a strong candidate but might be hurt by Governor Bush being in the race also from Florida. We can go beyond that to many other candidates, but I think looking at it now, those five look like the interesting candidates. And I think the two most conservative, Cruz and Paul, have interesting niches, will be in the race. It's hard to see them consolidating enough support to be the nominee. I think it would be hard for the Republicans to have them as the nominee. And the others, it's a little unclear, but I think that's a good top tier, at least at this point in the Republican race.
Turning to you, Arkady Gurney, for your assessment of the potential contenders on the Republican side and whether or not you also see these tensions between how the Republicans are going to win the White House. On the one hand, you have some arguing that they need to consolidate their base, more conservative, stick to their principles, and the others saying, you know, we have to reach out, and that would, of course, imply different candidates.
Well, I think at one level, the Republican field as a group looks very strong and dynamic and diverse. You have a lot of charismatic candidates from a variety of different backgrounds, you know, who've been governors, some of them senators. So there's a lot of choices that Republican primary voters are going to have among who to choose from. I think the challenge that they face is that each of them represents different factions within the party. And as that article you pointed out gets at, there's, I think, a lot of tension between what it might take to win this primary and what it takes to win 51% of the votes in a general election. And you can see those tensions playing out in the primary process. And I think it'll be interesting to see who comes to the top. I think there really is a lot of possibilities. I think it's a very wide open field. People have talked about that maybe Governor Bush is the front runner and the establishment favorite. But I think it's far from a foregone conclusion that he's going to be the nominee. I think there are many, many candidates who could end up on top. So it'll be very interesting to watch. But I think a core challenge will be, is there one candidate who can unite this party? And is the process of uniting the party, does it do something to that candidate such that they're no longer able to attract the independents and the swing voters who will ultimately decide the election?
Indeed. Well, back to you, John Fortier, to discuss what you think is at stake in the upcoming presidential election. I mean, it's ways away, but yet it's very close because we're already talking about the elections, and President Obama is, I guess, for all intents and purposes, to some extent a lame duck, although he can still accomplish quite a bit. You know, some are talking about there's a Supreme Court. We don't talk about that a lot, but that's critical. People are members of the court are getting older. There may be replacements, and this could tilt the court in one direction or the other. What other issues do you think are at stake?
Sure. I mean, the court obviously essentially divided 5-4 with a number of older justices that could change hands or be reinforced depending on the winner of this race. Certainly, I think we've come to we moved far down the road of implementation of the president's health care plan. And yet, if there were a Republican president and Republican majority, there would be certainly some change in that direction and maybe an attempt of a lot of change. You can look at foreign policy where we've had significant changes, and if Republicans were to take place, we might have some rejiggering of that direction and questions of Iran and the Middle East and a number of places where we're going to have ongoing troubles. So I think, you know, this is a big election. I mean, all presidential elections are a big election. I still think, as much as over the long term, I think Democrats have an advantage about the demographics of America. More younger voters and Hispanic voters are turning Democratic. That's good for the party. I think we're still a pretty closely divided country in many ways. And so that general election will be competitive. I think many of the Republican candidates you could put up would be strong candidates. And if Hillary Clinton, I think, will also be a strong candidate. So I think it could be a tight election with a lot at stake and one that people will find great interest in.
And the last word to you, Arkady, with respect to what you think is at stake in the upcoming election and to what extent, particularly on the Republican side, there's going to be a debate over many of what many say are President Obama's achievements, particularly the health care law. The Republicans seem to be dead set in trying to dismantle that and other, you know, foreign policy initiatives.
My gut is that the big issue in this election, like most elections in the United States, will be the economy and who puts out a stronger vision of who can help grow the economy, grow the middle class going forward. And I think the signs that you see from many of the Republican candidates is that you see more and more in the rhetoric that the concern about growing inequality, the concern about the pressures that middle-class families are facing with stagnant wages and increasing costs, that you're seeing that rhetoric is getting picked up more and more by the Republican candidates. What I think we haven't seen is that the policies that would actually address these things are getting picked up. So I think that on the economic debate, I see the signs as suggesting that Democrats and candidates like Secretary Clinton may have the higher ground in terms of where the mood of the country is, and that this concern about the prospects for maintaining a middle-class lifestyle or getting one, that this is a deep concern that many, many voters are very concerned about for themselves and their children, and that is shifting a little bit the rhetoric. And maybe towards the advantage of Democrats for the general election.
Well, we'll have much more on the 2016 presidential race in the months ahead. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Arkady Gurney. He's a senior vice president at the Center for American Progress. Gentlemen, as always, thank you for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Dave Magnus, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.